Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast, where we bring together the best medical minds, thought leaders, scientists, patients, and caregivers to inform and inspire the spondylitis community. I'm your host, Jill Miller, living my best spa life, knowing that how we meet today has the power to change everything going forward. Please note that the information provided in this podcast should not be considered medical advice. We do encourage all listeners to consult their healthcare professionals for medical concerns. Thank you for listening, and we hope you find our discussion today enlightening. Hi, and welcome to SpondyCast. Today, we have two guests. First is Dr. Pam Weiss, a pediatric rheumatologist at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia. She has advanced training in clinical epidemiology and a focus on pharmacoepidemiology and outcomes of children with spondyloarthritis. She has developed disease response and outcome measures for youth with AxSpA, as well as classification criteria for axial disease in juvenile spondyloarthritis. She has over 15 years experience leading clinical research endeavors, including multi-center research and research involving international collaborators. She has served on steering committees, advisory boards, and data monitoring committees for pediatric trials. Notable to Spondylitis Association of America, in 2014, she received SAA's Jane Burkell Young Investigator Award, and she has served as the SAA Medical and Scientific Advisory Board Chairperson from 2020 to 2022. Our other guest is Emily New. She is a mother of six children, including Antoinette and Jerome, who have been diagnosed with ankylosing spondylitis. Emily holds an MBA from Louisiana State University, Shreveport. In 2022, she founded Mercy Mission House Emergency Shelter, which is a homeless shelter in Ohio. She's a parent advocate for CARA, Childhood Arthritis Research Alliance, parent partner on different research studies, and advocates alongside Antoinette in Washington, D.C. when they are in town for family appointments at the National Institutes of Health. The New family began Anna's Angels, which is a nonprofit group that does different fundraising activities in support of research, specifically in the field of spondylitis. And they are very excited to partner with SAA and early investigators through their fundraising efforts. Dr. Weiss and Emily, thank you so much for being here today. We are going to talk about juvenile spondyloarthritis, research, advocacy, and I'm very excited to have you both. I got to spend some time with Emily, and I already thought Dr. Weiss was a rock star. So we've got multiple rock stars today. How are you, ladies?
I'm good. Thank you so much.
Good. Thanks for the opportunity to chat.
So we'll start with Dr. Weiss. I want to know, what made you go into juvenile rheumatology, or, and specifically, you do a lot.
Well, I really like the patients, and I when I was training in medical residency, fell in love with a lot of the different subspecialties, like cardiology, infectious diseases, nephrology, and one of my colleagues at the time said, "Pam, you should think about looking at rheumatology as a subspecialty because that is something that affects the whole body." Went into the rheumatology clinic and absolutely loved it. Loved the diseases, loved the patients, and loved the families. And one of the things that I loved the most about it was also the continuity that the providers had with the patients. Juvenile arthritis is the most common diagnosis that we see in rheumatology clinics. And so those patients, you know, just became a forefront of my training. And as I progressed in terms of what I knew, I started to realize how much we had yet to learn and how far we had to go in terms of our treatments for kids with juvenile arthritis. And then the kids with spondy in particular were ones that we just really had a lot of unanswered questions for. And so, you know, as my training progressed, that's where I navigated my efforts.
Nice. And who inspired you to put in for the Early Investigator Award?
Bob Colbert from the NIH, who Emily actually knows quite well because she was down at the NIH, I think maybe a week or two ago, and she took a picture with him and sent it to me and said, "Look who I'm hanging out with." But he actually got me looped into to the SAA completely, and then was very encouraging of me applying for the Early Investigator Award.
I didn't know that, but that's amazing. He's a great guy. I told him we were going to have him on too someday. Emily, so you have 6 children, and 2 in particular have been impacted, and your family's been impacted by spondylitis. Tell us particularly about your daughter Antoinette's journey.
Sure. Yeah. Antoinette, when she was about 2.5, she started waking up in the middle of the night screaming, and she would say that bugs were biting her back. And of course, we didn't have any idea what that meant. And then we noticed she was walking strangely, really kind of leaning forward. So our pediatrician, thankfully, because we have so many kids, knows us well. And, you know, she knew that this was not just, you know, something where a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old is mimicking something else. And luckily for us, she had done residency with our current rheumatologist, Dr. Stacy Yardwin. And so she was able to get us a referral over there. And we were able to go see her. So Antoinette was diagnosed when she was just 3 years old. So at the time she was diagnosed, which is crazy to think about, but it was 12 years ago, she was the youngest patient that anyone had known of who had been diagnosed with spondylitis at that point in time. So we were really in kind of a dark space where there wasn't a lot of information or knowledge about kids that young and, you know, what we should do moving forward. So it's been quite a journey, but she's a little trailblazer and we'll do about anything there is to find out new information, which I love.
I love that. And good on you for being the mom that made sure, like, you saw it, right? And
yes,
you advocated for it beyond just being a 3-year-old, because I've had a few of those. that's really amazing. And kudos to your doctor knowing the diagnosis, time to diagnosis for most people. Okay, so Dr. Weiss, I'm going to punt back to you. As we get into this, you did a study or were involved with a study, and it was called the Back Off JSPA study. What was that all about?
So it's actually ongoing. Emily's one of our parent partners, as is Antoinette. And it's a study that was born from the question that I probably get first and foremost from my patients in clinic as soon as they're doing well on medication, which is, when can I stop it? And or is this a forever medicine? What's up with this? Because a lot of the families have only ever been treated with things like antibiotics for strep throat. And so as soon as things go away, the medicine comes off. And so the concept of having to stay on medicine for longer than they can even imagine is one that they want the answer to. And so teamed up with Emily and a couple of other parents and decided that we would ask if kids with JSPA had to stay on medicine for a long time or forever, or whether there were opportunities to taper or de-escalate the medicines. And so this is a trial that's running at 30 sites right now across the country. We don't have results yet, but it's ongoing.
So are there different approaches and different strategies that you guys are looking at in particular?
Yeah. So the 3 strategies that we're looking at, again, so I guess the first question is, we don't know if it's okay to even stop or de-escalate medicine at all. So one of the arms of the trial is just to keep taking your medicine at standard doses and frequencies. The second arm of our trial is that we space the doses out. So they get the same dose, but less frequently. So for kids who get Humira every 2 weeks, they then start to take their Humira every 3 weeks. And then the last arm in the trial is we tell the kids to stop taking their medicine and they get a total break from their medicines. And then we're following the kids on these 3 arms for up to a year. And we're seeing how they do. And we're measuring both. We hope that nobody has their disease come back, but if it comes back, we're capturing that. And then importantly, we're also capturing the patient's lived experience. So My patient, parent, stakeholder team that includes Emily and Antoinette helped pick outcomes that were important to them that they wanted us to study. And so the kids, not the parents, the kids are filling out questionnaires via the iPad every time they come in to let us know how they're feeling. And that also incorporates like, how do you feel not having to take injections and things like that.
Do we have any idea what percentage of children are in like an inactive state?
We have rough estimates. I would say, it's probably greater than half of the kids get to a state where their disease has been quiet and stays quiet for at least 6 months, you know, which again is tremendously better than it used to be, but obviously not everybody can get there. But the hope is that with our newer therapies and more studies that we'll get more and more kids to that state.
And are the, compared to those of us with adult spondyloarthritis, are children, do they have some unique attributes or unique challenges?
Yeah, so I think that's a great question. When we think like from the physician aspect, what aspects, if I were seeing a kid versus adult, are different, we know that kids have more what we call peripheral arthritis, so arthritis of like the knees, ankles, wrists, elbows, and things like that. They also, at least in reports that have come out over the last decade or so, have more aggressive disease at the hips. But I think there's a lot of unique aspects to kids that maybe affect some adults, but maybe not all, in terms of the way injections impacts their daily life, the way they think about themselves in regards to their peers, the feeling of it being unfair that, you know, other 13-year-olds their age don't have to deal with stuff like this and having to miss out on sports and what have you.
Oh, Emily, aside from loving your child and wanting the best for her, what motivated you to get involved? This is not an easy lift, I'm sure, for a mother.
We asked all of those questions that Dr. Weiss is talking about. So, and I get the answer all the time, both from our home rheumatologist and also when we go to the NIH, that we don't have a crystal ball. So I was super excited that maybe we can help create this crystal ball of sorts to be able to answer that question that we all have, right? Plus, you know, if you're a parent of a newly diagnosed child and you do any kind of reading at all and you look into the medications, you start to panic already anyhow. So even giving a break off of medications for a while would be such a wonderful thing. And that's actually one thing that we're doing right now with JT or Jerome. He's taking a 6-month break because outside of just spondylitis, you know, what medication did to him is he started getting recurrent MRSA infections. So his body, his immune system responded in that way because he carries a high colonization. So just there's so many different things that, you know, each person is unique. So being able to take that break for him is so extremely important. So yeah, it's just exciting to me. I think it's really exciting. And from a parent standpoint, to be completely honest, knowing that someone cares and cares enough to spend their time really focusing on what your child has been diagnosed with provides a hope that oftentimes isn't there otherwise. And I think that's one of the most beautiful things about Dr. Weiss is she is all in. And, you know, you just have this hope because when I first met her, I'm like, there's no way that Antoinette will ever be off medication. And she's like, no, you know? So you know, you just kind of have some hope. So it's exciting.
How did you meet Dr. Weiss?
You know, I think I was, we had a CARA conference, I believe.
I think you're probably right. At least that's the first time we definitely met in person. I think I don't know if we met each other by accident or if one of our other parent stakeholders, Melanie Kohlheim, who's also very involved, she may have also said, you guys need to meet.
Yep. I think that was it. I think Melanie introduced us for sure. So yeah.
And for you, Dr. Weiss, having someone like Emily or other parent partners, like what value does that bring to the research?
It brings tremendous value. I think a lot of, and this is important, and I'm trying to spread this word amongst other physicians who are doing studies. You know, a lot of times, you know, the view is, well, they don't really get the question. They don't understand the scientific background and the research methods and blah, blah, blah. But what they do understand is the importance of the question. They understand how to make it real, and how to tell other families why studies is important, why the study is important in words and ways that I think the clinicians maybe can't do, not even maybe, definitely can't do as well as the families do. Emily also has tremendous marketing skills, which, you know, I do not have. And we have other parents on our stakeholder group who run circles around me in terms of a lot of the skill set that they have because of their own professional lives that they've actually been able to bring to the study. So as part of our study, Emily's created this tremendous digital platform for the study that, like, she manages. I would never be able to do anything with. And she has these visual marketing skills. She and our other parent stakeholders created all of the flyers and everything that's patient and family facing, they have done. I mean, I've looked over it to make sure it's accurate, but this comes from them. And when we've had hiccups in our recruitment, or we hear about, you know, reasons families are maybe saying no to participating in the study, we take those reasons back to the parent and patient stakeholders, and we say, you know, what's your advice in terms of what the team should be saying to these families? And is there anything more that we could be doing? Should we change the structure of the study? And they give us direct input. And we've seen actually very direct evidence that their advice has worked.
Wow, that's amazing. Whoever thought listening to the stakeholders affected?
It's fantastic. And I think when given a very real and tangible role, you know, they fly with it.
Totally. And there, it requires so many different, I would think even for, in general, more and more, I think more and more research is requiring more stakeholder engagement, if I'm not mistaken, right? I know like NSF is similar, but it's so
important.
Yeah,
there's some agencies where it's definitely required, but I think, you know, having had the experience that I've had now, I don't think I would ever want to do a study like this without stakeholder help.
Yeah. I heard someone who does a lot of medical research. He said, we do these large data sets and we always think of, some people think they're bits and bytes. We think of them as human lives. And it's so stuck with me. Okay. So advocacy, this is a fun one. Talk to me about your advocacy work, Emily, and you and Antoinette do it together, right?
We do, yeah. So when we have to travel to Washington, D.C. or the Bethesda area for our National Institute of Health appointments, I wanted her to kind of see that she can advocate for herself and that it's important to stand up and advocate for yourself. So we would create something called Anna's Ask because, you know, when she was younger, she would go by Anna. Now it would be Antoinette's Ask because she wants her full name. But we would create basically a brochure almost that would go in and tell her story, but then also have specific asks. So depending on what was going on with her, you know, we've asked for NIH funding before. We've asked for them to get rid of step therapy, you know, different, whatever we're looking at, and we would partner with different folks like the Arthritis Foundation or even SAA and ask what's going on right now legally that we can help go in and push from a personal perspective as well. So it's really been a great experience for both of us. And, you know, I look forward to doing it again. And now we can take JT along with us. You know, we've got double the voice.
I love that. And part of this is like creating the human connection in front of the policymakers, I think, mm-hmm. is where you can, it becomes hopefully magical. Do you have anyone in particular that you want to see or talk to from a policy standpoint that you would put as a standout?
Well, I have a wonderful, hilarious story for you. So I can't remember exactly how old she was, but I think, well, I want to say she was either 5 or 6. And Boehner was Speaker of the House, but he's also from Ohio. So we went to see him and she ran up. She does not know who he is. She just knew we were waiting in this line because he had this event and we were invited. And she runs up and hugs him and grabs his hand and gave him a t-shirt that said Anna's Angels and just started talking to him. And it was hilarious because I don't think anyone in the room knew what to do, but she just went for it and like grabbed his leg. And he was very gracious. He was very gracious with her. But yeah. And then she also has gone again. Remember where we're from, right? We're from Ohio. So she went and sat behind Jim Jordan's desk and started writing on a piece of paper.
Just like her.
Yeah. So yeah, we've had some fun.
Well, and she sounds like a very typical Spondy warrior. We've come to learn our special, especially good warriors. And Anna's Angels is your nonprofit that does a number of fundraisers. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how Anna's Angels has been supporting SAA and spondylitis research?
Yes. So we've had Anna's Angels for a while now. We've done things. We used to do the Jingle Bell Run for the Arthritis Foundation in the past, again, you know, to go towards research. And then we wanted it to be specific to spondylitis. So we reached out to the SAA and we were able to create a partnership there where we could have specific fundraising site where people could donate directly to research, because that's always, I think, been our stronghold where we feel like that's going to make the difference in the future for future families. And then we've done things like A Week Out of the Kitchen. So we'll partner with different restaurants and we publish something in the paper and say, okay, you know, take a week away from the kitchen in your home for a good cause and eat out. And we've done pancake breakfasts and just all sorts of different things. It's really fun. We've sold t-shirts, bracelets. It's fun for her to get involved as well and kind of decide what she wants to do. But it's just a way that, you know, she feels like she has a little bit of control and then can put those dollars towards something she feels strongly about.
Do you sleep?
No.
I didn't think so.
Sometimes we sleep, but yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're doing incredible work. I'm blown away. Dr. Weiss, if you could share, are there other areas that you're bringing parent feedback or the parent partner information into the study to adjust it down the road?
Emily, you can probably help me brainstorm with this.
Great.
We met as a group most recently, maybe 4 nights ago. Yeah, our typical meetings are once a month and we run through how's the study going overall. Do we have any particular sites that we're having problems with? What are the reasons people are saying no? We've got an abstract going into the annual scientific meeting of the ACR that we wanted their input on. So that was circulated around our patients and parent partners. I will also say that we have, in addition to the calls that I have with the stakeholders in the evenings once a month, we have my clinic research coordinators from CHOP meet, I think, either once or twice a month with the clinic coordinators from the 30 different sites. Okay, that's why Emily has to help me with this. once a month to just go through tips and tricks and what have we heard from one site that might work at your site. Here's some new ideas we have. And Emily and our other stakeholders are invited to that call because the study teams get really tired of listening to me and my team, but they listen to the parents. And so when the parents say, you need to say this, when the families say this, they listen. And so I think their help, and as the studies progress, we've really found that their presence on these calls is really, really valuable. Another tremendous impact that they've done is at least once a year since the study started, we have these annual stakeholder meetings that include the study principal investigators at each of the 30 sites, so the rheumatologists who are running this study at each of the sites, the other rheumatologists from the sites who are helping or interested in the study conduct, the study teams, as well as our funders. And Emily and our stakeholders have actually become a large portion of that presentation because, again, we ask them to address a lot of the issues that we're having because a lot of it is just motivating families to think about contributing to the greater good versus going rogue and just doing something and see how it goes for their child in particular. And as you've already seen in these last couple of minutes, Emily's a pretty dynamic and engaging speaker. And I think she does a better job at many things than I do. So I would rather her address a lot of these issues than me. And she does a great job.
No, it's amazing. I love, we were talking earlier with Dr. Dorr, who's out in California and also part of the SAA Advocacy Committee. But we were talking about how even when you get in front of people sometimes to talk about a disease like this, you spend 30 minutes going through what the disease is because maybe they haven't heard of it, especially policymakers. And then you never even get really to the ask. I actually want to see your ask sheet. I would love it. I think that would be great. But it's hard. There's so much noise and to like get cut into it and get people to listen. And yeah, I'm amazed.
Just like people like to listen to the parent stakeholders more than they like to me, they really like to listen to kids more than they like to listen to adults. Yeah. I mean, the impact that kids can have even when they're young is tremendous. So I hope that other kids get inspired by Antoinette and reach out and do some of the things that she's doing because they really can make quite a difference.
And is the study ongoing?
Like, it are is.
You continually adding?
Yeah, we're I think as of this week about 60% enrolled, and we're hoping to finish up enrollment by summer 2025.
Okay, and where can people get involved?
They could go to our fantastic web presence, which is www.backoffjspod.com, and they have everything at their fingertips, including links to the SAA juvenile spondy information. But that actually lists all the sites across the country where patients can enroll. And I believe Emily has programmed it so that if you link on the spot, you can actually see who the site principal investigator is. And then you can look up and find a way to wiggle your way in. And there's also links to email Emily and myself directly if you have questions about the study.
Oh, amazing. And so as we kind of wrap up here, I have a question for each of you. Emily, can you share a piece of advice for parents of newly diagnosed children?
My piece of advice would be to be involved and to have hope, because I think that's really difficult in that moment. I think it's very easy to shut down and just want to go into denial, but to stand up and say, we've got this, and be involved and have hope.
I think you're right. That's, hope is a big one. Dr. Weiss, what do you hope is the impact of the Backoff JSPA study on juvenile spondyloarthritis?
I hope that at the end of the study, we have some real tangible things to be able to tell families. So when I get that question from a newly diagnosed kid who's just starting to feel well on their medication, when can I stop? I can say, hey, I should also mention we have ancillary studies for the back off to look at the blood and imaging to see if we can personalize the recommendation. So all that information I'm hoping we can look at and say, hey, with the cells that we see in your blood, and, you know, the way disease has affected your body so far, your chance of coming off medicine and being able to stay off medicine for at least, you know, a year is 75%. Or, you know, maybe in the case of somebody who we know from the study may not do well off medication, we say, you know what? I know you don't want to hear this, but the likelihood of staying well off medication is less than 5%. And so, you know, you're at a key time in your childhood and you want to keep playing sports and living your best life, I suggest not messing with anything. And, you know, the medication side effects and what have you are probably worth dealing with right now to maintain your lifestyle. So that's the kind of information. I'm not one to shy away from using medicine, so I don't want that to be the message. If a kid needs to be medicated, I will find a way to get them to do all the things that they want to do and should be doing. But if they don't need to be on all the medicines that they're on, I would love to take the less is more approach and find out how little medication can I keep them on to keep them well.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, anything that I missed?
The only thing I was going to say is when you look at including parents and patients in research, I think the way that Dr. Weiss was able to include us very early on and allow us to really truly have an opinion. And I'm going to use the PROs as an example, because that was one where, you know, sometimes there's this set of PROs that we're asking, but we were able to look at that and say, we don't want to fill all that out. You're asking the same thing in 13 different ways. Like number 3 and number 13 are the same question. Like take them out, make it one question. And her team took that advice and really was able to make it, you know, more user-friendly for the family, to where more families are going to want to participate. Because I'll tell you, sometimes when you sit in front of an iPad and you're like still answering and it feels like the same question for the 15th time, it's been 40 minutes. You're like, why am I doing this? But so listening to that feedback and really allowing us to make adjustments and changes and to be so involved was really, everyone on the team feels like they've made an impact, and that in of itself is, it's really special. So I just want to say thank you, Dr. Weiss. And I want to thank the SAA, because you guys are the ancillary study actually was an idea from a parent for the one that you guys are participating in. So.
Well, I want to thank you though for having helping to have the voice.
Yeah.
That is not easy in the work you do. So thank you both. I am hugely inspired by you. Always you, Dr. Weiss, but I'm always
I'm inspired by Antoinette. I'm in awe of her too. Don't worry. And Jill, you inspire me too. That's why I do what I do and why I study the things I study, because the people who are affected by this are amazing people and deserve attention.
Yeah. This has been an amazing 30 minutes.
Jill, I thought of one more thing. I'm so sorry. Yeah. You had asked earlier how it affected our family, and I didn't even say that, but we went from a family with 2 incomes. We actually had to go down to, my husband and I were calling in sick so much to work that we had to sit down and have a meeting basically and say, okay, which one of us is going to stay home, because we can't, she was in physical therapy. There were so many appointments. We were trying to help her feel better. And it was just too much. And so that had a huge impact on our family as well, as I'm sure you can imagine. And even with the other kids, and who's going to go to her appointments and who's going to stay home and which kid gets drug along this time versus not, all of that. So there is a huge impact to the larger family that sometimes, you know, I think is forgotten or sometimes gets missed, because it really does. Like every sibling's impacted, parents, grandparents,
the whole family. So it's a life changing, family altering situation.
That's such amazing. A great way to say that. Yeah, absolutely. So,
well, on that note, we're going to wrap for today. I would love to get an update in 6 months. And yeah, thank you both for all the work you do. And I appreciate you sharing your story, Emily.
Well, thank you. Thank you both.
Thanks, guys.
SpondyCast was made possible by donations from the Spondylitis Association of America's individual members and our show's corporate sponsor, AbbVie. Since our founding in 1983, the Spondylitis Association of America has been the face, voice, and leading nationwide nonprofit, educating, empowering, and advocating for people living with spondyloarthritis. Through our extensive work with patients, the medical community, and partners, we provide information and resources to help people impacted by the disease live better lives and champion research to find a cure.